Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Hi, thanks for being here. I appreciate you. And let us continue with the letter to the brothers. Nichiren begins, women are faint-hearted, and your wives have probably given up their belief. Yet you must grit your teeth and never slacken in your resolute mind and conviction. Be as fearless as Nichiren when he acted and spoke out before Hei no Saimon no Jo. Although theirs was not the path to Buddhahood, the sons of Lord Wada and of the governor of Wakasaka, as well as the warriors under Masakado and Sadato, fought to the death to preserve their honor. Death comes to all, even should nothing untoward ever happen. Therefore, you must never be cowardly, or you will become the object of ridicule. So, again, a reminder of who he's talking to. The brothers are both officials in the shogunate government. So they're in positions of high influence, but also in positions where they have a lot of eyes upon them and their actions, right? So he's saying, like your practice in life, remain steadfast, because otherwise the demise that you face will be public and the ridicule will be intense. So even though your wives may be vacillating as to, you know, they're close, they're in the government. So I'll also remind you that the government is hand in hand with whatever the head religion or authority is. They're very intermingled. So for the brothers to be signed on as devotees and disciples of Nichiren, who is the reformer and the one muddying up the works, as it were, for the religions in power at the time, these two brothers have put themselves or are in a place of great controversy, and their wives, as you know, we're talking 13th century, their very lives are dependent upon the strength and the protection of their husbands. Yeah. And so if everyone around their husbands is saying, you know, stop doing that, that's stupid. Sorry about that. I keep forgetting to move that microphone into place. Anyway, I apologize. Anyway, so the women, they're afraid, you know, they don't have the same courage. And so they may backslide and go do the ordinary thing that all the other good wives are doing. But Nichiren is reminding the brothers, don't let that dissuade you. Don't let your desire to be with your wife, your woman, your partner, outweigh your dedication to your own enlightenment, to Buddhahood. Stay strong. Because not only will it prove out in your personal matters, in your family, but the whole world is watching you, right? All of Japan is the world at that point, to them. I mean, I'm not saying they're not aware of other countries. They're being invaded by Mongols, right? All right. He continues, I am deeply concerned about you both. Therefore, I will relate a story that is important for you. Two princes named Po-i and Shu-chi were the sons of the ruler of Kuchu in China. Their father had willed his title to the younger brother Shu-chi, yet after he passed away, Shu-chi refused to ascend the throne. He being the father passed away. This is bad grammar. Translators, take note. Po-i urged Shu-chi to assume the title, but Shu-chi insisted that Po-i, the elder brother, should do so instead. Po'i persisted, asking how the younger brother could contradict their father's will. Xu Qi agreed that their father's will clearly named him, yet he still refused the throne, claiming that he could not bear to push his elder brother aside. Right? This is a known tradition at the time, is that the eldest son, still to this day, I don't know, maybe my nasal congestion is messing with my language center in my brain today. Tis that season. I hope it doesn't bother you too much, but I couldn't go without reading a Gosho today. Both brothers, he continues, then abandoned their parents' estate and traveled to another, where they entered the service of King Wen of Chao. Shortly thereafter, the state was attacked. King Wen was killed by King Chao of the Yin dynasty. Less than 100 days after King Wen's death, his son, King Wu, was prepared to do battle with King Chao, but Po'i and Xu Qi, holding fast to the reins of his horse, strove to dissuade him, saying, quote, "You should be in mourning for 3 years after your father's death." Again, tradition. "If you start a war now, can this conduct be called filial?" King Wu grew furious at this and was about to kill them both, but Dai Quang Wang, the king's counselor, restrained him. The two were so loath to have anything more to do with this king that they went off to seclude themselves in Mount Shuyang, where they lived solely on ferns. One day, a person named Ma Tzu passed by and asked, quote, "Why have you hidden yourselves in a place like this?" End quote. They told Ma Tzu the whole story, and he replied, quote, "If that is so, don't these ferns also belong to the king?" Thus reproached, they immediately stopped eating the plants. It is not the way of heaven to forsake worthy men. Therefore, a god appeared to them as a white deer and provided them with milk. After the deer had gone, Xu Qi said, quote, "Since the white deer's milk is so sweet to drink, its meat must taste even better." Po'i tried to silence him, but heaven had already heard his words, and the brothers were abandoned at once. Thus, they eventually starved to death. Even though one acts virtuously throughout one's life, a single word can ruin one. Not knowing what thoughts you have in your hearts, I worry about you a great deal. Whew. That's a pretty heavy story. How many times have you committed yourself to doing what's right, doing the right thing, but then in a silly moment of distraction, you say something out loud and you hear yourself say it and you go, wow, that was really not necessary. I wish I could take it back, but I can't now. That kind of slip, mental slip, we say slip of the tongue, but the tongue is attached to the brain, yes? And if you remember those moments, if you can, I'm not asking you to, but if those moments arise and you think about them, think about this. You, for that moment, caved into some ancient desire you have in your mind, and you just let it express itself. Those are the most regretful moments in our lives, aren't they? And yet we don't entirely begrudge them, because they are profound desires. And so we wrestle with this day to day, right? This is our samsaric existence. So it's interesting to note that, because what that suggests is that when we commit when we resolve to achieve our Buddha nature, our Buddha mind, our Buddha wisdom, if you will. There's a side of that trajectory that is going to drag our samsaric karmic lizard brain kicking and screaming into enlightenment. And occasionally, boop, these really negative thoughts, negative influences in our mind will just pop up unexpectedly. And so you need to know that not only is that normal, it happens to everyone, but that as we are, and this is the import of resolve, of truly being determined to awaken to our Buddha nature and stay in that Buddha nature, stay in that condition, life condition, so that when those little burps of negative karma arise, we stop them. We acknowledge them, there it is. And we have the awakening, the power of our enlightenment to stop those thoughts from taking form, from expression, from actually making a cause. It happens in an instant. But we can all do it. That's part of being awakened to our Buddha nature, is being able to see it coming and thwart it, cease its formation. The words from the teachings, right? When the Thus Come One Shakyamuni was prince, his father, King Suddhodana, could not bear losing his only heir, and so would not allow him to renounce his royal station. The king kept 2,000 soldiers posted at the palace's four gates to prevent him from leaving. Nevertheless, the prince eventually left the palace against his father's will. In all worldly affairs, it is the son's duty to obey his parents. Yet, on the path to Buddhahood, disobeying one's parents ultimately constitutes filial piety. The Contemplation on the Mind Ground Sutra explains the essence of filial piety. By renouncing one's obligations and entering the Buddhist life, one can truly repay those obligations in full. That is, in order to enter the true way, one leaves one's home against one's parents' wishes and attains Buddhahood. Then one can truly repay one's debt of gratitude to them. So again, this is a battle between tradition, earthly samsaric traditions, and the ultimate goal of life, awakening Buddhahood. It may seem contradictory, but because of the goals, the lofty clarity and compassion of Buddha mind, what you accomplish is far greater than simply earthly existence. And so, though parents may want to be protective or fearful of your leaving, or for whatever myriad complexities there are in the culture you're in, the time, even when parents send their kids off for the practice or Buddhist practice, I was thinking of other things, but let's just stick to Buddhist practice, they still hold many reservations. The less that they get in the way of that, the more beneficent, the more fortunate your karma is. But it's still there, right? There's always this familial pull to keep the family as one unit. But the awakening of Buddhahood affects your generations back and forth, seven generations, right? It reverberates through the karmic chain. So they will benefit from it. It's just for them, it's not immediate. They don't see it right away. But when you achieve it, their lives will be affected, whether they understand that or not. It's just the way energy works. Energy is. You can't say it's energy is different here or there. You can say the manifestations of agglomerations of energy take different form. That's how we're here. But energy itself is non-discriminatory. It simply is. Moving on. In worldly affairs as well, if one's parents foment a rebellion, it is one's filial duty not to follow them. This is mentioned in the classical filial piety. In the classic, there's evidently a teaching solely dedicated to filial piety, and that's what he's referencing. When the great teacher Tendai engaged in meditation on the Lotus Sutra, he saw his deceased parents seated on his lap to obstruct his practice of Buddhism. This was the work of the heavenly devil, who took the form of his father and mother in order to oppose him. Again, remember, Buddhism is about mental function, how our minds work. So, in this case, he's indicating that even Tendai, this great bodhisattva and scholar of Buddhism, when he meditated on the Lotus Sutra, would have visions of his parents trying to oppose him continuing to do so. This is all in the mind, right? And so this force, that this energy of the past that wants to come up and establish conformity or take you back to some prior existence in your mind is the formation of this obstacle. And this formation of this obstacle is given a name. And in Buddhism, it's the heavenly devil, right? Or the Dairaku Tenno Mao, the principal god, evil god of the of Sanchoshima, right? The obstacles of practice. It has many names, but that you see this convention, it's almost entertaining, of naming that which is a fundamental samsaric influence. Going on, I've just cited the story of Po'i and Shu Qi. There is one more lesson you should learn from history. Emperor Ojin, who is now the great Bodhisattva Hachiman, was the 16th sovereign of Japan. Emperor Ojin had two sons. The first was Prince Nintoku, and the second Prince Uji. The emperor transferred his throne to the younger brother Uji. There's that fall from tradition again. After their father passed away, Uji asked his elder brother to take the throne, but the elder brother reproached him, saying, quote, "How can you refuse to comply with your father's will?" With our father's will. They argued back and forth, and for 3 full years, no one claimed a throne. Auspiciously, 3 years is span of grieving, right? We saw that earlier. As a result, the people suffered indescribable grief. It was like a curse on the nation, and Prince Uji finally thought, as long as I'm alive, my brother will not assume the throne. So he committed suicide. A lot of drama in this story. At this, Prince Nintoku was racked with sorrow and fell into despair. Seeing this, Prince Uji came back to life in order to give words of encouragement to his brother. Then he passed away again. It is recorded that when Nintoku at last ascended the throne, the nation became peaceful and received 80 boatloads of tribute yearly from the 3 Korean kingdoms of Silla, Pakche, and Koguryo. I'm telling you, that speech center. So these are interesting stories about filial piety, right? Other cases exist where the relationship between the sons of worthy rulers was not harmonious. What bonds have enabled you, two brothers, to continue on such good terms? Could you be Prince Pure Storehouse and Pure Eye Reborn, or the embodiment of Bodhisattva's Medicine King and Medicine Superior? When your father disowned Tayu Nosakan, I expected that Hayo Nosakan would refuse to side with his brother, thereby making it even more difficult to clear up your father's doubt and have him rescind his disownment. If what the boy Tsuruyo told me is true, you two were alike in your resolve. So overjoyed was I at this unbelievable news that I wrote another letter. Could there ever be more wonderful a story than your own? The record of Western regions tells about a hermit who lived in Deer Park at Varanasi, India, in the hopes that he could master occult powers. He learned to turn tiles and pebbles into jewels and change the forms of humans and animals, but he could not get rid on the winds. Oh, he could not yet ride on the winds, sorry, and clouds, or travel to the palace of the immortals. In order to accomplish these goals, he took as his assistant a man of integrity. Giving him a long sword, the hermit instructed him to stand in one corner of a practice platform and told him to hold his breath and utter not a word. If the man remained silent through the whole night until dawn, the hermit was certain to master the occult. Determined, the hermit sat in the center of the platform with another long sword in hand and chanted incantations. Making his assistant take a vow, he said, quote, "Even at the cost of your life, say nothing." The man answered, "Though I die, not a word will leave these lips." In this manner, they passed the night until just as dawn was about to break, the man cried out suddenly, and the hermit immediately failed in his attempt. He reproached the man, saying, "How could you have broken your vow? This is deplorable." Repenting deeply, the man said, "I dozed off for a little while, and in a dream, my previous master appeared and rebuked me. Yet I endured this, not uttering a word, for my debt of gratitude to you is much greater. My former master grew furious and threatened to behead me, but I still said nothing. Finally, I was beheaded, and when I saw my own corpse proceeding on its journey from death to the next life, my sorrow was indescribable. Still, I did not speak. Eventually I was reborn in a Brahma family in southern India. The pain I felt on entering and leaving the womb was unbearable, yet I held my breath without crying. I grew up to be a young man and took a wife. My parents died. My child was born. I felt sorrow and joy, but said not a word. Living like this, I reached my 65th year. Then my wife said to me, 'If you still refuse to say anything, I will kill your beloved child.' The thought flashed through my mind that I was already in the last years of my life, and that if my child were killed, I could not beget another. Feeling that I must shout, I suddenly awoke." The hermit said, "We were not strong enough. You and I have been deceived by a devil. Our task has ended in failure." Lamenting, the man of integrity said, "Because I was so weak-willed, you have failed to master the occult." The hermit regretfully replied, quote, "It is my fault for not having admonished you enough beforehand." Nonetheless, as the record states, the man was so grieved he could not fulfill his obligation to the hermit that he brooded over it and died miserably. In China, the occult evolved from Confucianism, and in India, it is found among the non-Buddhist teachings. Yet, it does not even approach the Hinayana teachings of the Agama Sutras, much less the connecting teaching, the specific teaching, or the perfect teaching. Therefore, how could it measure up to the Lotus Sutra? The four devils fiercely oppose the mastery of even such a shallow art as the occult. How much greater, then, are the tribulations that will confront the disciples and lay supporters of the person who is the first to embrace and the first to propagate it in Japan, the seven characters of Namu-myoho-renge-kyo, the ultimate principle of the Lotus Sutra. It is impossible to imagine, let alone describe in words. The great teacher Tendai's great concentration and insight is the essence of his lifetime teachings and the heart of the whole spectrum of the Buddha's sacred teachings. During the more than 500 years after Buddhism was introduced to China, 10 teachers appeared, 7 in the north, 3 in the south. Their wisdom was as brilliant as the sun and moon, and their virtue was extolled throughout the country. Yet, they were confused as to which sutras were shallow or deep, inferior or superior, and as to the order in which they had been taught. It was the great teacher Tendai Chiche who not only clarified the Buddha's teachings, but also brought forth the wish-granting jewel of a single moment of life, comprising 3,000 realms from the repository of the five characters of Myoho-renge-kyo, and bestowed it on all the people in the three countries. This teaching originated in China. Not even the scholars of India could put forward such a concept. So the great teacher Chang'an commented, quote, there has never been anything to compare to the brightness and serenity of concentration and insight. And even the great scholars of India were not in a class with him. The doctrine, and again, you understand that this is all said in the teachings after Shakyamuni's passing, right? In other words, they're not devaluating Shakyamuni's teachings by saying making these statements. What they're saying is that since the original Buddha Shakyamuni has passed in the years after, no scholar existed to expound the profundity of the Lotus Sutra. Not until, in fact, it had traveled well out of India and into China for hundreds of years did this teacher Tendai Chiche arrive and see clearly the proper order of the teachings and the value, the proper position amidst all of the teachings of the Lotus Sutra and Myoho-renge-kyo. So, he continues, the doctrine of the 3,000 realms in a single moment of life revealed in the fifth volume of Great Concentration and Insight is especially profound. If you propagate it, devils will arise without fail. Obstacles, in other words. If they did not, there would be no way of knowing that this is the correct teaching. It's interesting. It's an interesting truth of samsara, isn't it? We hear it throughout Western philosophies and more traditional talk. No pain, no gain. You can't appreciate or truly love until you've had lost love or failed at things, so on and so forth. We have it in all aspects of society. But here, fundamentally, it is used again to demonstrate the superiority of the Lotus Sutra. If you weren't going for great gains, if you weren't pushing your samsaric existence to its maximal potential, then you would have an easy life, albeit always suffering. It's easy to suffer, in other words. It's almost callous, but it's used in a motivating way. It's saying, look, if you want to be miserable your whole life, you don't have to work very hard. You don't even have to try. You'll just be miserable. But if you endeavor to get out of your misery, get out of your own way, and awaken your Buddha nature, yeah, expect that you'll have obstacles. Expect that you'll have doubts. Expect that you'll have all sorts of little mental attachments and demons trying to convince you to just sit down and be miserable. How appealing. So this kind of duality used as teaching, it's just It's always been us, been with us. It's a function of our samsaric reality, right? So interesting that Nichiren uses it in this way. One passage from the same volume reads, quote, "As practice progresses and understanding grows, the three obstacles and four devils emerge in confusing form, vying with one another to interfere." Right? What I just said, in other words. "One should be neither influenced nor frightened by them." Don't pay attention to those obstacles. They're just old attachments, ego, things that are keeping you from being released, happy, joyful. "If one falls under their influence, one will be led into the paths of evil." Evil being negativity, right? Negative, not just negativity, but negative influence. Influence on what? Your life, your maximal potential, your Buddhahood. "If one is frightened by them, one will be prevented from practicing the correct teaching." There it is, end quote. This statement not only applies to me, Nichiren, but also is a guide for my followers. Reverently making this teaching your own and transmit it as an axiom of resolute mind and conviction for future generations. The three obstacles in this passage are the obstacle of earthly desires. What did I already say? The obstacle of karma, which is created from desire, and the obstacle of retribution, because of stupid things you may have done in the past, and I mean stupid in that relation to your Buddhahood, there'll be some residual effects that you have to counter, that you have to counter, not mentally counter, take to task. And they may establish in your environment through the same mechanism, right? You just have to deal with it, own up to it, and get through it, move past it. The obstacle of earthly desires is the impediments to one's practice that arise from greed, anger, foolishness, and the like. Right? The obstacle of karma is the hindrances presented by one's wife or children. So he's extending karma to be, your karma is your, is in yourself, but yourself is also your environment. In Buddhism, there's not a duality there. The duality is some delusion of our samsaric reality. But in Buddhism, we recognize that our environment is ours. We are not separate from it. We are it. It is us. So because of that, our karmic existence has a world around it that agrees with that karmic energy. And if you were to have a wife or children or a boyfriend or whatever is in your environment, they are manifestations of your karma as much as they are their karma, but yours are synchronized. They're in simpatico wavelengths, right? So if you're going to think of this, if you're going to have thoughts that are obstacles, thoughts of laziness, nah, don't get up, you can do it later, that kind of thing, that's a negative influence on your awakening, right? Well, that same little voice that comes in your head and says, eh, let it go, is also manifest in your wife, your children, your boss, your car. All right, we don't need to talk about that right now, but your environment, right? The weather. But let's stay intimate because that's a little easier to fathom. So your wife may be the one who says, or your husband may be willing to say, don't get up, let's stay in bed a little longer. Don't practice that, it's too hard, people will hate us for it. Do what everyone else is doing, right? These are earthly desires, foolishness, not thinking the long term, thinking the short term benefit, reward, right? We have all these words, but they mean different things depending on what they're applied to. So karma, that's karma. That's, you can see it in action around you as well as within you all the time. So Nichiren makes this very good point. And the obstacle of retribution is the hindrances caused by one's sovereign or parents. Well, that's an interesting extension of retribution there too, which, as you know, I don't like that word retribution, but it's actually the manifested effect. One of the things of the 10 factors that we recite in Gongyo, right? But that's why calling it retribution is odd, is the hindrances caused by one's sovereign or parents. You wouldn't think that they would be retribution. So that's why it's not a good word. Your parents are a manifested effect of your instantiation as a human. You came through them to manifest, therefore they are a manifested effect of your desire to be. You see how beautifully circular that is? So it's not like your parents are payback. That's why I don't like retribution implies that. It's a manifested effect of the cause of your instantiation. Oh, now it makes sense, right? I think I'm going to have to do another edit to this book. Moving on, of the four devils, the workings of the devil king of the sixth heaven are of this last kind. In other words, that's where that obstacle in your life will, that theory that the devil represents will come through that avenue of a manifested effect. So you can't disown it. You see, this is all the rumble whirlpool of your energy. In Japan today, many people claim they have mastered the practice of concentration and insight, but is there anyone who actually encountered the three obstacles and four devils? So now he's flipping the argument on its head. They claim to have achieved all this, but did they ever have these obstacles that are sure to manifest if that's truly something you've achieved or are working to achieve? If they haven't run into the obstacles, then their claim is dubious, right? Interesting analysis. He goes on, the statement, if one falls under their influence, one will be led to the evil paths of evil, indicates not only the three evil paths, but also the worlds of human and heavenly beings, and in general, all of the nine worlds. Therefore, because they're all worlds beneath Buddhahood, right? So, therefore, with the exception of the Lotus Sutra, all of the sutras, those of the flower garland, Agama, correct and equal, wisdom periods, and the Nirvana and the Mahavacharana sutras, will lead people toward the paths of evil. Also, with the exception of the Tendai school, the adherents of these seven other schools are in reality wardens of hell who drive others toward the evil paths. Even in the Tendai school are found those who profess resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra, yet actually lead others toward the pre-Lotus Sutra teachings. They, too, are wardens of hell who cause people to fall into the evil paths. Now he's classifying the evil paths as anything beneath Buddhahood, right? Hell, hunger, animality, humanity, nin, tranquility, learning, realization, bodhisattva, all of them now are transgressed or converted into evil because evil, as I keep repeating in Buddhism, is a negative influence. It keeps you from your ultimate Buddhahood. Because when you set those up as the goal, you are blinding yourself and walking right by Buddhahood. You follow? So if you have a teaching, Lotus Sutra, that takes you directly to Buddhahood in this moment in your life, why would you follow a lesser teaching? Why would you follow, even though they're all teachings that lead you to the realization of the Lotus Sutra, if they're used that way, if the provisional earlier teachings are used specifically to get you to the Lotus Sutra, and then you practice the Lotus Sutra with that wealth of knowledge, perfect. But if along the way you decide, the Lotus Sutra, not necessary, I'm going to focus here, you are walking away, walking in the opposite direction from Buddhahood. Because now that you know that it's the goal and you walk away from it, whatever you do, now you've converted all these teachings into hell. Because you're actively denying your potential for Buddhahood right now in this life, in this moment. Do you see what he's doing? Where are we time-wise? All right, well, I guess that's enough for today. But that's a lot to consider. It's a lot to consider in and of itself, as this Gosho and this advice to the two brothers, again, in their turmoil over their father being so vehemently against what they're doing and staying in line with the prevailing government religious authority that claims the pure word school as superior to the Lotus. Eventually that will change, but this is what the brothers are dealing with, and this is why Nichiren is talking to them about the nature of things, really. Both with the teachings from tradition, the teachings from sutra, the teachings of a lot of filial responsibility here, because filial responsibility is what's at stake for them. They have heavy influences all around them, including their own father, telling them not to walk toward Myoho Renge Kyo. And as he just explained, Nichiren, this is the same as walking to hell. Like I said earlier, just accept your misery. Not good enough. So I hope there were some words in there that sparked some insights, or at least some compassion in you. I always feel energized after I read some of this this scholarship. Whether it's Gosho or other sutras, it's almost like a little air pump is pumping up the air mattress of my brain, because I'm full of air. Anyway, to be human, what a divine experiment. I thank you all for listening. I'll let you go now. Have a wonderful day. Please take care of yourselves and those around you. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Bye-bye.